아마
고객님
announcements by the speaker. The leader of the house and the Honorable Lakshman Kiriyala for the leader of the house and Honorable Gayantha Kannothilaka for the Chief Whip have been appointed. As the parliamentary traditions, the leader of the political party or the independent group who commands a majority of the opposition members are considered the leader of the opposition. Today, I proclaim that the group leader of the UPFA should be appointed as the leader of the opposition. Thereby, Honorable Mahinda Raja will be considered the leader of the opposition. As the chief opposition whip, Honorable Mahinda Amaravira, I recognize Honorable. Honorable Speaker, according to the standing order, the strangers cannot come to this parliament. There are some strangers in this house. Honorable Speaker, according to the constitution of our country, I refer to the section 99.13. I would read it out. Any member of parliament or any member of parliament whose appointment considered under which political party or an independent group who had contested in the symbol of that party in the general election, if any case of resignation or otherwise, any parliamentarian who has resigned from the political party that he had contested for, since that membership has been ceased, after 1 month period, he is considered that he has vacated his position as the member of parliament. So these UPFA members came to parliament as the members of the SLFP, Sri Lanka Freedom Party. Therefore, the members of SLFP, if they have resigned from the SLFP, eventually, automatically, this is not a matter to be considered in the courts. If any member of parliament has resigned from SLFP and after 1 month's lapse of time, automatically they are considered that they have vacated their parliamentarian. You can reply. Yeah, you said that the dissolvement is correct. We are teaching you a good lesson of law. You said the same that you didn't consider, you didn't recognize the government. There's time for argument, but I would not reply back for the lawyers of the stairs. We are ready to answer back to the real legitimate lawyers. Honorable Speaker, my argument is that SLFP is a constituent party of the UPFA. If any member who has resigned from the SLFP within 1 month's time, automatically they are considered not members. 60% of that UPFA are Pohottua members. You are the leader of the Pohottua, you know. Thank you.
Chandimira Kodi. But wait. Yeah. Garu, I'll give you Mr. Chandima Virakodi, then you can have it.
Garu Kat.
Honorable Chandima Virakodi. Honorable Speaker. Two chimpanzees jumped over to the other side. Honorable Speaker, to preserve democracy and dictator has been appointed to parliament. There is no cabinet. Only the prime minister has been sworn in. Is that the democracy? Honorable Sumandiran.
Order, please. Now don't disturb. In the what event? Honorable Sumandiran.
I want to make our party's position. I want to make our party's position very clear.
Andubashi Mandirma Karnal Vadi and please. Inaganda. Yeah, go ahead.
I want to make our party's position very clear with regard to the position of the leader of the opposition.
Yeah.
As you said, the party in opposition that has the largest number of seats is entitled to the post of leader of the opposition. There is no question on that. The question is, there are two questions before this house today. First question is UPFA a party in opposition? I say with respect that the head of the UPFA is the head of the government and the head of the executive, the head of the cabinet. Not only that, he also holds three portfolio in the cabinet. In such an instance, our position is that when a member of the UPFA, and that too the leader of the UPFA, is in the cabinet, the head of the cabinet, and holds three portfolio in the cabinet, another member of the UPFA cannot be the leader of the opposition. That is one. Secondly, from the issue that has been raised by the leader of the house today, Article 99.13 of the Constitution very clearly stipulates that if a member of parliament resigns or ceases to be a member of the political party through which he was elected to parliament, then his seat in parliament, he vacates his seat in parliament upon the expiration of 1 month from ceasing to be a member of that political party. The question has arisen as to whether those who resign from the SLFP have also ceased to be members of the UPFA by that very fact of resigning from the SLFP, or by taking membership in another political party, whether they have so lost their membership in the SLFP and consequently lost their membership in the UPFA as well. Now that is a question of fact which needs to be ascertained. It can't be something that is covered up and kept, because it concerns the composition of parliament. As to whether there are strangers in the house here today, I take the view that there are strangers in the house here today and they must be asked to vacate the chamber. But if there is a question of fact to be ascertained, surely the parliament is competent to ascertain that fact, and we will be moving for an appointment of a select committee to inquire into that question of fact, to ascertain as to whether some members, some who claim to be members and who have entered this chamber today, have in fact lost their membership in parliament, because that's a crucial question as to the composition of this parliament itself. And I'll be moving for appointment of a select committee. And for these two reasons that I just enumerated, I appeal to the speaker that the position of the leader of the opposition ought not to be changed until you take these two matters into consideration. We also wish to address the speaker in writing within a couple of days, placing our position in this respect. This is on a matter of principle. not because anybody wants to hang on to any seat, but on a matter of principle. It is on a matter of principle that we even were forced to go to court when, on wrong advice, this parliament was even dissolved purportedly and had been held by the Supreme Court by unanimous judgment by 7 judges that was a violation of the constitution by no less a person than the president of this country. So we don't want the constitution violated any further. If some members have ceased to be members of parliament, they must withdraw from this chamber now. And if they refuse to do that, this parliament is perfectly competent to inquire into that question of fact. And the select committee of parliament can go into that. Until such time, I earnestly request the speaker that the position of the leader of the opposition not be changed. Thank you.
On that case, honorable member, you have to give me a written submission because I have to take a decision fairly early. By Friday, I'll give my ruling on this. On Ajibit Perra, then after that, honorable Gamam Perra. We don't have a debate. After that, Susim Premjanta.
Oh.
Honorable speaker. On the fact raised by Honorable Sumanthiran, I would like to point out one thing. Any MP who came to this parliament as a member of a particular political party has joined another political party within after 1 month's lapse of time, he ceased to be an MP. So it's a crucial point and controversial issue. There are factual matters to be considered. I don't think in prima facie you could just come to a conclusion. So this is very much crucial, sir, because the appointment of the Honorable Mahinda Rajapaksa, who was just appointed as the leader of the opposition, this refers to him as well. Therefore, I earnestly request, sir, to appoint a special committee on this and to take a decision subsequently. Honorable Sushil Premjanta. Only for just clarification, honorable, next honorable Gambam Pillai and then honorable Rauf Hakim. Honorable speaker, the 17th of August 2015, only 5 political parties have been contested and one here seats, one is UNP, then UPFA, the JVP, the Muslim Congress 1 MP, and EPDP, and I'm sorry, with TNA it is 6. Within UPFA, it's an alliance. We know the fact that UNF is also an alliance. Within last 3.5 years, there was a consensus between the UPFA and UNF. That was called a consensuous government. That is how even the portfolios was extended. And according to any gazette notification or the nomination list, I signed the nomination list and of the UPFA and the national list. So therefore, since there's no any consensus, UPFA is, as you have well recognized, is the largest component in the opposition. Therefore, honorable speaker, so there's no any bar for any member of the UPFP to be appointed and to be in the office of the leader of the office. So that is, your decision is quite conclusive. Honorable Gamma. Honorable Speaker, Honorable Sumandiran came up with the fact that Honorable Mahinda Rajapaksa cannot hold the position of leader of the opposition since he came here as a member of the UPFA. Honorable Speaker, there are three proceedings in which the leader of the opposition was appointed from the same party in which the president held. Under DB, Honorable DB Vijayathunga, Gamini Dishanayake was appointed as the leader of the opposition. And when Honorable Chandika Kumarathunga became the president, during the same period, Honorable Ratnasiri Vikramanayake was appointed as the leader of the opposition. The recent example was that in 2015, when Honorable Maithripala Sirisena from UPFA was the president, Honorable Nimal Sirisena of the same alliance became the leader of the opposition. So there are three such proceedings for my argument, Honorable Speaker. Has the secretary of the UPFA intimated to you in writing that they have, some members have vacated their membership? No.
Honorable Rao Fagim.
Honorable Speaker, I would like to refer to a text message that has come on the page of Daily Mirror that says UPFA parliamentary group decides to nominate former President Mahinda Rajapaksa as opposition leader in parliament. Now I wish to ask, now the problem is whether the former president has become a former member of parliament. That's the issue now. So now this is a very critical question. Nothing personal against Honorable Rajapaksa, but the question is whether we are to call him Honorable Rajapaksa or Mr. Rajapaksa. You see, now the question is, Mr. Speaker, the issue remains to be, now we know our constitution says that the judicial power of the people shall be exercised by courts through parliament, except in the case of privileges and powers of parliament. Now the judicial power of the people is vested in this house, and now this is a matter that has been gone into and decided upon by this house and house alone, and therefore it is important for us to set up a select committee to go into this in detail to see whether this matter of fact is in fact true or not. Now I also know that Honorable Uday Gaman Pillai and Honorable Vasudeva Nanayakara, being attorneys at law, has wrongly advised His Excellency the President and has unfortunately put Honorable Mahinda Rajapaksa into serious trouble, right? Always giving wrong advice. So therefore, this issue has to be ascertained by this House, and therefore we have to await the determination. Once the select committee is appointed, let us go into this detail, because we have to examine examine the constitution of the UPFA, which is lodged with the Commissioner of Elections. We have to summon the Commissioner of Elections, ask him to produce a constitution, because we have the constitution. We have to produce a constitution and see whether who are the constituent parties of UPFA and how is the membership of the UPFA decided. Because UPFA is the party that contested the last parliamentary election. So, Article 9913. Article 9913 is very clear. Only when a member is expelled from a party that they can go to courts within 1 month. Otherwise, ipso facto, immediately, once that member obtains membership from another party and his membership ceases, then his parliamentary seat also ceases immediately. Not to the expiration of 1 month. You see, so these are facts that we go into in detail, and that is why Standing Order 21, which talks about strangers in the house, though it can be raised and we can ask honourable members who are strangers to withdraw, we are not going to go that far.
Yeah.
We will await the determination of the select committee okay. once it is appointed.
I look at that. Api avasara karamu garu Dinesh.
Finally, honourable Dinesh Gunawardena, we have to conclude this matter. Honourable Speaker, the UAPFA as the members of the UPFA after the largest component of the parliament of UNF, we are the second largest group as you quite correctly proclaimed. The majority of the opposition, that is UPFA, the members of our group has appointed and selected, and as you appointed Honorable Mahinda Rajapaksa as the leader of the opposition. Since the fact that the president being a member of the UPFA, Honorable Sumandaran came up with a very low argument, forgetting the fact that Honorable Prime Minister under the Honorable Chandrika Bandaranaike was the same here, but I at that time the leader of the opposition was from the same UPFA. And Honorable Susil Premajayanta mentioned that going by the previous judgments given by you, if the secretary of a political party informed you in writing that such and such members of the parliament have resigned from that party, you should take a decision. If otherwise, as Honorable Amarveer has written to you, and even for the CPU in the International Parliamentarian Association, you have conveyed the same message. Therefore, we vehemently oppose this low level of arguments, and please proceed further. Honorable Leader of the House, Honorable Speaker, Honorable Chandrika Bandaranaike Kumarathinga didn't help the portfolios of cabinet. She was only the president. She didn't hold any portfolio. You just refer. She didn't hold any portfolio as the president. Honorable Vijitamuni Desai, sir. Honorable Speaker, today, as the members of SLFP, myself, Honorable Lakshman Seniratna, and Honorable Indika Bandaranaike, cross over to support this government as the SLFP. There were so many reasons behind our decision, Honorable Sir, particularly in the history of our parliament and in the history of our politics of our country. The parliament has been subjected to an defunct and had so many clashes, taking the country down the lane to a doldrum, and that instability of the parliament was felt by the communities of all folks of work, and the poor people were crushed through the taxation of the country and they cannot shoulder such a huge tax burden. Therefore, Honorable Sir, while paying our due respect to the August Assembly and to the Constitution, we are accountable by the people who have given their mandate to represent them here. I am very much perturbed having seen the calamity and the pandemonium had this, we saw in this chamber itself. Honorable Maithripala Sirisena and our advisor Honorable Mahinda Rajapaksa, there are no any clashes in our political career in future. I wonder whether he has obtained a membership of any other party. I saw it in the media. I still recognize him as our honorable advisor to our party. Honorable Speaker, as the members of the SLFP, we have a great responsibility, Honorable Sir, Honorable President, the SLFP and our party members must be safeguarded as if the little ants entrapped in the killer plant. SLFPers are very much miserable today. They are helpless, Honorable Sir. They were as if the little ants entrapped in the pitcher flower. Honorable Speaker, I was born as an SLFPer. My father was the organizer of the Avisa Vela. These people cannot remember that past. Since 1979, I contested SLFP. My father and myself, there were no candidates to be found. They were threatened during that time. In 1989, I contested in Mondragala district. There were no polling stations because 7 agents of our party were killed. They were killed due to they worked as our party organizers in those polling stations.
Honorable Speaker, during that time no leader was on our side and they didn't come to our districts and nobody was there to support and get our votes, and we did it ourselves from SLFP. That is how we won the power. And we worked against these violations of law. And we took measures to make Honorable Madam Shreema Bandaranaike the Prime Minister, and also we struggled to make Honorable Chandrika Kumaratunga the President. And Honorable S. Bidisa Naike and these members know about it, Honorable Speaker. And I was a member of the youth organization of the party, and then I became myself and my father were members of this committee, and my father contested from Colombo district, and my mother was advised by our relatives, and they questioned my mother as to why you allow them to contest, both the father and the son. And there my mother wanted me to come to parliament. That is how we endeavored, that is how we strived on behalf of the party. And also, Honorable Speaker, when it was for 17 years we were in the opposition continuously, and Honorable Ranjit Madhuma Bandara, we have Honorable Ranjit Madhuma Bandara, and he and myself, we are enemies. And around 5 of my supporters are still in jail. And these are not just land cases. Please remember, these are not land cases. And these are not results of games or deals. Please keep that in your mind. And these are political struggles. But now these two enemies are sitting on one side. And when there were floods, we had to evacuate using the same methods. And why is that? Around 100 supporters and organizers called us and they contacted us, even the trade union members. Now the SLFP, we are not allowed to go forward, to proceed, and we can't revert back to. And either, Honorable Speaker, we have to remove the loins, or if not, we have to remove the fence. That is the decision we have to take, because we are hit against the fence with our loin cloths. In 2001, we contested in Moragala district, myself, and I don't know whether Madam Honorable Sumedha is here and Honorable Pushpa Kumara. We contested. And when there was a defeat in Hambantota and Attanagalle, it was only the Moragala district which gained the victory for SLFP, Honorable Speaker. And that is our history. That is how the history goes. I would not repeat all these things. However, I would be thankful to the former president, because he made me a cabinet minister, and I respect you for that. Although I respect you, you are surrounded by wolves and dogs, so you can't proceed in this manner. You can't go forward in this manner. And also, I respect His Excellency the President Maithripala Sirisena. He also made me a cabinet minister and encouraged me to render services. And the people of Wellas, now, what were the portfolios given to us? I am the Minister of Jungles and Sumedha Minister of Clutches, and those are the portfolios given to us. Those were the treatments given to us. And that is how they treated us. These are words of Sinhalese language. You have to know about the words, vocabulary, Sinhala vocabulary, before learning English. And there is another minister to work on clutches. And irrespective of parties and party politics, people need, we endeavor to make everybody a king. Ministers, presidents were appointed, prime ministers were appointed, and they were able to gain many votes. But, Honorable Speaker, the people didn't get what they expected, what they deserved. And in Wellasa, we had riots in the past, and I am now able to contribute towards that. And under the former government, I have to respect them, because I was anyway not allowed to work under my scope. Nobody was against me. We constructed 200 tanks during the last regime, with the leadership of His Excellency the President Maithripala Sirisena. We have completely constructed 100 tanks. Loba Uma, and the most beautiful city of the country is Bandaravela, and St. Thomas and St. Thomas Colleges and Army School. And also, Honorable Speaker, we have the Teachers College and many other tourist attractions in Bandaravela. An attempt was made to divert water towards Hambantota, but under Handapanagala project, we have increased the extents, and the Balaharua Kuda Oya tank, a canal has been dug, and to provide, to create a tank there too, Honorable Speaker. And if so, with the support of these 10 massive, these three massive tanks, we can support many other minor tanks. I am not bothered about the minister portfolios. Please don't think that I am here to take minister portfolios. I would like to support the government to create a better political stand. In the past, Honorable Arjun Ranatunga knows that I donated 100 lakhs to the party, and even during the regime of my father, we spent a lot on behalf of the party and to construct the party, and to we have pioneered that process even in the past, in the history. With that, I conclude. Thank you.
Mama Kalingi Party other.
As I earlier stated, we have many important discussions to do today. Presentation of papers by the speaker. First of all, the Auditor General's report for the year 2017 and also the audit performance. I propose it to be printed. Secondly, as per Section 41A of the Constitution of the Democratic Socialist Republic of Sri Lanka, the second quarter of the year 2018, the performance report of the Delimitation Committee of this particular range, and also as per the Section 42A6. For the first quarter of the year 2018, the progress report of the procurement committee, and also as per Section 41A6 of the Constitution, the reports of the National Police Commission for the first and second quarters of 2018 will be presented to the House. So until what time should we continue today? This debate will go on today and tomorrow, adjournment of the House. Until 1 o'clock tomorrow, and the adjournment motion, Honorable Nalinda Jayathissa. Adjournment motion. The damage caused to the country by the executive presidency introduced in 1978 is immense. From 1988 onwards, the abolition of the executive presidency had been a key election pledge at all presidential elections, and this opinion definitely emerged victorious in the presidential elections held in 1994, 2005 and 2015. As the arbitrariness and anti-democratic nature of the executive presidency is evident more than ever before at this point of time, it is moved in this House that the process for the abolition of the executive presidency should be carried forward. Honorable Speaker, I think after this political clash or the crisis, as a parliament, we have to take immediate measures towards the abolition of the executive presidency. We have, during the past 40 years, we have experienced the negative impact of the executive presidency. And that is why this kind of that is why it is really needed, and that is why pledges were made in all the presidential elections to the effect that this position would be abolished. Therefore, the majority of the people who expect democracy and political discipline in the country, the majority of the people of the country have an ambition towards the abolition of executive presidency. And therefore, Honorable Speaker, in 1978, this position was introduced in 1978, but from there onwards, especially from the leftist movements and the progressive movements, there were protests against this position. You may remember in 1982, Honorable Members, please be seated. Otherwise, it's difficult to continue the debate. Now this political discipline and all are not needed now. Earlier they listened to the speaker and behaved well, but now when we move this kind of a motion, they are not ready to listen. Honorable Speaker, therefore, in 1982 onwards, attempts were made by our political campaigns towards this effect. In 1982, the Srima Bandaranaike policy statement included this fact as its item number 2, that is, towards the abolition of executive presidency and providing the executive powers to parliament and the legislature. And today, Honorable Vijitha Muni made a speech in an aggressive manner, and he talked about the history of SLFP, and he stated as to how they made sacrifices, the supporters made sacrifices on behalf of SLFP, and the SLFP supporters wanted this policy statement to be practically enacted, especially towards the abolition of executive presidency. And then another general election was held later on, and there Honorable Srima Bandaranaike and Honorable Chandrika Bandaranaike presented their policy statements, and they stated very clearly that abolition of executive presidency is one major objective in their manifesto. And then Honorable Chandrika Bandaranaike in July 1995 made a pledge that this arbitrary executive presidency would be abolished, and it was presented as a written pledge. And when he made this pledge to the, she made this pledge to the people, and she was in power for 6 years, and in 1999, after the presidential election, proposals were made to amend the constitution. And there, it was proposed to abolish executive presidency and to come up with a parliament system which is held responsible. And afterwards, the Mahinda Chintana Manifesto, it states that they will abolish executive presidency and they will create a new constitution with the agreement of all parties. And in the Mahinda Chintana vision for the future in 2010, it has indirectly stated that this executive presidency would come under the guidance of parliament. So In 2010, there was a detailed description in Mahinda Chintana Vision for the Future about abolition of executive presidency. Earlier, executive presidency was utilized to postpone elections and to change the political parties, to have negative impacts on the judiciary, and to make influences on the judiciary, to privatize government entities, to protect the fraudulent parties, and for such things. And executive presidency was utilized to enter into very drastic agreements too. Likewise, in their manifesto, they have very clearly described the negative impacts of executive presidency in the country. But in 2010, after the presidential election, you know very well that you know about the term of 10 years of Honorable Mahinda Rajapaksa. And there were serious protests against him too. As a result, several social movements were created to abolish executive presidency. And individuals like Venerable Madhulwave Sobhita and others engaged in this kind of campaigns to abolish executive presidency. And His Excellency the President Maithripala Sirisena in 2014, he quits SLFP promising that he would be the general candidate to abolish executive presidency. And in the new town hall, a media briefing was conducted in 2014, and there he stated that executive presidency would be abolished within 100 days. It can be done through a referendum, and the ability was there. And there he made the pledge that it would be abolished within a period of 100 days. And within the election campaigns, not only that particular statement, and throughout the political campaign, he stated the same idea. He stated in a Matugama meeting like this: "This corrupt executive presidency should be abolished, and please join hands with me to do that. When this executive presidency was started, we, SLFP, was against it. The former presidents mentioned about the abolition of executive presidency in their political manifestos, but I would made a pledge that I would practically do it. And 47 members have signed this agreement, but I would act according to it." And that is those are the pledges made by the then candidate Maithripala Sirisena. He was talking about the abolition of executive presidency. And once he was appointed the executive president, Venerable Madhulwave Sobhita's at the cremation of the Thero, His Excellency the President Maithripala Sirisena made a pledge once again like this: "As Venerable Sobhita expected, I would do everything to abolish executive presidency. Therefore, this same pledge has been made several times in all the presidential elections in our country. Not only that, Honorable Speaker, in 2015 presidential election, a common candidate came forward to abolish executive presidency, and also the opposing party couldn't tell that they would protect executive presidency or increase the executive powers. Therefore, the other opposing party too said that the executive presidency system should be amended accordingly. And that is how these things proceeded. From 1982 onwards, it was one slogan in all the protests. And in 2005 and 2015, the masses of the country voted to abolish executive presidency. Therefore, there is no need to discuss on this further. We have to take firm action and do it practically. Honorable Speaker, the present president has, I would once again emphasize that he was appointed to this position because he made the pledge to abolish executive presidency. And within the first 100 days, the 19th Amendment was brought in to reduce certain executive powers. But the very person who came to power to abolish executive presidency is now talking about abolishing the 19th Amendment to the Constitution. That is his idea. The idea of the abolition of the executive presidency is no more in him now. In elections, we now people, through their experiences, they know about the repercussions of executive presidency very well. They don't need anything else. The last 50 days are sufficient for people to understand about executive presidency. When the 20th Amendment was brought in, the people who stated that this executive should be protected. In television discussions, they questioned about the negative impact of executive presidency and so on. We don't need to answer those questions. The past 50 days are more than enough to understand about executive presidency simply through the behavior of my Honorable Maithripala Sirisena. We, in the journey towards the abolition of the executive presidency, there were several criteria to be met. Firstly, the majority power should be there, and power should be there within the party. And we all had past experiences about the pledges made to this effect. And this is how Honorable Maithripala Sirisena acted in an arbitrary manner. And the signatures were checked and the dates were checked, and that is how the executive president acted. So we would like to question about the past period. This executive, the people who were committed towards the abolition of the executive presidency are not there with the same idea today. So we would like to question about it. Within these 50 days, the political setup was completely destroyed, and the country faced disgrace as a result. So would you like to continue with the same way? That is what we have to question now. And also, Honorable Speaker, within the past 50 days, an answer was given to that previous question, and also an answer was also given to the question by Honorable N.M. Pereira. N.M. Pereira has once questioned that if a lunatic comes to this chair, what would happen? A person who is off his head. And now the answer was very evident during the past few days as to what happens if a person who is off his head sits on this particular chair. And that behavior was very evident. Therefore, Honorable Speaker, we don't have any ethical right to neglect this responsibility. On the one hand, we have this arbitrary behavior of the executive should be controlled, and the Supreme Court has given determinations to that effect. So are we to continue with this executive presidency further? I appreciate Honorable Kumara, who has stated to the Island newspaper that this excellency, the president who acted in an undemocratic and unconstitutional manner, should not be in the position further. The person who acted in an unconstitutional manner should not remain in the seat. It is the truth. It is the reality. Therefore, we have, Honorable Speaker, if we continue with this executive presidency, in certain countries of the world, they have executive presidency. But if the person who comes to this position acts in this manner, in future we will not need at least a president in the country, because the people will curse even the presidency if this it is the behavior of the executive presidency. Therefore, we have presented the 20th Amendment, and when it was presented, certain small parties they can't even come to parliament without the support of major parties. So those small parties, they are like they want to get the support of the bigger parties, major parties. Therefore, they want to win the hearts of the leaders of major political parties. Therefore, they want these positions to continue. When we talk about a position like executive presidency, Honorable Speaker, and when we do a serious constitutional amendment, we need two-thirds majority, and also we will have to go for a referendum. And we have to the constitution of 1978 has been amended 19 times but not approved through a referendum. So we have to go for a referendum and we have to allow the people to do it. I would like to question now these minor political parties who come, who gain power with the major political parties obstructed certain things. And in the past, they stated that 159 lakhs of people who are the voters of the country have this power. And they are the people who have to decide about what to happen. So we have to allow them. Honorable Dalla Salha Perum also stated that we may have 225 members here and some other judges in the Supreme Court and the Speaker and all, but it is the people of the country, the voters of the country, who should decide what to happen in the country. So let's allow them to do it. If we are to do that, allow that to happen, Parliament should come out with the proposal to abolish executive presidency. And there should not be any obstructions from Parliament. Therefore, what we urge from everybody is to, we may have different ideas about executive presidency, but we have to allow the people of the country to decide about executive presidency, whether it's needed further or not. If people decide that it's needed further, then we will accept it. But we should not block it to this particular limited group. And when the past, when the president was elected in the election campaigns, even UNP stated many things towards the abolition of executive presidency. But I listened to Honorable Ranil Wickremesinghe yesterday, who stated that who urged two-thirds majority for them in the next election so that they would abolish executive presidency. They are asking for two-thirds majority to change executive presidency, abolish executive presidency, but this has never happened in the past. And earlier, the 17th Amendment was abolished and 18th Amendment was introduced and the executive powers were further increased. And Honorable J.R. Jayawardhana has limited this term of presidency to two, but it was also increased. It was two-thirds a member, a leader with two-thirds majority would never abolish executive presidency. So this is the appropriate time to do this because most of the parties are without this two-thirds majority. So I would like to urge all those who supported against this conspiracy to get together for political, to establish a better democracy in the country. We would request Honorable Mahinda Rajapaksha too. You also suffered as a result of executive presidency. Please forget about the things that happened in 2010. Now just think about what happened during these 50 days. The image of Honorable Mahinda Rajapaksha was completely destroyed as a result of using the powers vested with the executive presidency. The image of Mahinda Rajapaksha was destroyed and he couldn't defend himself against these executive powers. And
he also has an opportunity when he was in the Sri Lanka Freedom Party in 1988 with Sirimaa Bandaranaike and in 1993 with Chandrika Bandaranaike Morthing and 2005 by himself and 2010 by himself. And in 2015, indirectly, he has responsibility to work in keeping with the documents submitted by him. As long as this constitution is there, he will not be able to contest the future presidential election. And some people might say that he would be able to contest the presidential election. So So therefore, we request you to, you must be able to guide the Sri Lanka Freedom Party. There are some individuals who are trying to enter parliament by clinging onto your shawl. You must consult the views of the Sri Lanka Freedom Party members, and you must listen to the views expressed by people like Honorable Kumar Velgam and Honorable Vithumi Soisa, who have been in the Sri Lanka Freedom Party right throughout. So you will be able to take a decision according to your conscience in respect of the abolition of the executive presidency. Therefore, we all should unite. We want to share credit for this. And we all should consider that this is a national responsibility, and therefore it is a responsibility of all to extend their support to this. Therefore, even though this adjournment motion was moved by the Chandramukti Peramuna, it does not mean that the credit should go to the GOP alone, and this should not be opposed, because it was proposed, it was submitted by the Chandramukti Peramuna. In 2015, 6.2 million people voted for the president. Now he has an opportunity to abolish the executive presidency. Thereby, he would be able to win back the appreciation of the people. Now, once again, he is trying to become the president, and I think he is dreaming of becoming president again. But I don't think that he will be able to realize his dreams. We know that once about this bird, it cannot be brought back to life. Therefore, similarly, the president should take action to abolish the executive presidency, and he should hand over the powers to the parliament. And similarly, all members of the parliament have the opportunity to extend their support to the abolition of the executive presidency. So through that we can lay the foundation for strong democracy in the country. Therefore, I appeal everybody to extend their support to the evolution of executive presidency. And with that, I end my speech. Thank you. Honorable Hitherath would second the motion. And I also should announce that we will continue proceedings until 4:30 p.m. today. Honorable Speaker, I second the motion moved by Honorable Narendra Jayathi, sir. So while seconding this motion, I also wish to make a few comments about this motion. Honorable Speaker, today is a historic day for the Parliament of this country. For a period of 50 days, there was a crisis in the country, but now once again normalcy has been restored, and today is the first day of that March, and today the entire country has witnessed that this crisis was created by the executive presidency, which has arbitrary powers. Any country needs a leadership, but if we appoint a madman as the leader of the country, then that country would suffer. Therefore, the leader cannot be a madman or a lunatic. No leader has the right to violate the rules and regulations of the country. So during this 50-day period, the people witnessed this. On 8 January 2015, there was a political change in our country. One of the main reasons for that change, or that change was triggered by the dictatorial executive presidency system. That was why Maithripala Sirisena, the candidate at that election, he gave a pledge. One of the main pledges given by him was to abolish the executive presidency, and he sought a mandate from the people that he should be given 100 days to abolish the executive presidency, and he gave a pledge to the people that he would abolish the executive presidency within 100 days. So 6.2 million people voted for him, but he totally violated that pledge given to the people. Instead of abolishing the executive presidency, measures were taken to reduce certain powers of the executive presidency, especially due to the composition of the parliament, and we had to accept that reality. At that time, the UPFA had 162 members, Sri Lanka Freedom Party and other parties supporting UPFA, they had 162 members. The UMP had 42 members. The JVP, we only had three members in the parliament. But we all united and we all understood that this dictatorial executive presidency system should be, the powers of that post should be reduced to the best possible level. So we considered it, so that was why we considered the 19th Amendment as a progressive piece of legislation. And that is why we, and for that amendment, only 42 UNP members and the majority who supported it were from the UPFA. Now today they say there are various shortcomings in the 19th Amendment, and today they are putting forward various legal arguments, and today they say that 32, they are talking about 33-2 and 71-2. But the majority of the UPFA members supported the 19th Amendment. There were only 3 JUP members in Parliament at the time. But anyway, we saw 19th Amendment as a progressive step, and many people stated that there are many shortcomings in the 19th Amendment. But the Supreme Court, which has the powers to interpret the Constitution, it gave a historical ruling and stated that there are no shortcomings in the 19th Amendment, and through its judgment, the Supreme Court has very clearly stated that the 19th Amendment is a very progressive step. Honorable Speaker, what's the ruling given by the Supreme Court? It has not said that election should not be held. Now, misleading opinion is being formed. And when Honorable Mayank was resigned from his post, he said that the Supreme Court had decided not to conduct elections, not to hold elections. And similarly, several other people also said that the Supreme Court has said that election should not be conducted. But in this ruling given by the Supreme Court, it has not been stated that election should not be held. Honorable Speaker, from this ruling given by the Supreme Court, it has clearly protected and safeguarded the right of franchise of the people. And in the ruling given by the Supreme Court, it has been very clearly stated that nobody has a right to violate the right of franchise of the people. There are 2 important factors in this ruling given by the Supreme Court. One is that under Article 12(1) of the Constitution, all people should be treated equally, and the Supreme Court ruled that this has been violated as a result of the decision by the President to dissolve the Parliament. Then number 2, it has also very clearly stated the right of franchise of the people has been violated by the President's decision to dissolve the Parliament. Therefore, nobody has the right to violate this right. Honorable Speaker, at the general election held in August 2015, 225 members were elected to this Parliament. It was people who gave us power, who voted us in to Parliament. After the passage of the 19th Amendment, and 19th Amendment has very clearly stated that the Parliament would be elected for a period of 5 years. So people have voted for members of Parliament to take decisions on behalf of them for a period of 5 years, and also to hold powers with regard to public finances. That was why people elected 225 members of Parliament. That is the main feature of the representative democracy. But what happened, Honorable Speaker? The 225 members of Parliament elected by the people were... These 225 members of Parliament, they are one individual took the rights away from the people by dissolving the Parliament. He has not been vested with such powers by the Constitution, even though he is the executive presidency. The primary law of the country, the supreme law of the country, the Constitution, has not given any powers to a single individual to take away the rights of franchise of the people. Therefore, the Supreme Court has very clearly stated that no individual, either the President or any other person, has no right to take away the right of franchise of the people, and Supreme Court very clearly stated it was wrong. Therefore, the arbitrary dissolution of Parliament, as a result of this arbitrary dissolution of Parliament, the people's right to franchise had been violated. So the Supreme Court had never stated that election should not be held. Some people are giving misinterpretations about this ruling. In fact, the Supreme Court has given its ruling to protect the rights of franchise. It has also stated that all people are equal before the law. And His Excellency Maithripala Sirisena too is a citizen of this country. Therefore, they all have equal rights, and nobody can take away those rights. Honorable Speaker, I would like to quote page 87 of this historic ruling, and I would like to present to this Parliament.
If this court were to deny relief merely on the basis that the petitioners have failed to establish unequal treatment, we would in fact be inviting the state to equally violate the law. Equally violate the law. It is blasphemous and would strike at the very heart of Article 4D, which mandates every organ of the state to respect, secure and advance the fundamental rights recognized by the Constitution. Rule of law dictates that every act that is not sanctioned by the law and every act that violates the law be struck down as illegal. It does not require positive discrimination or unequal treatment. An act that is prohibited by the law receives no legitimacy merely because it does not discriminate between people.
Honorable Speaker, it has been very clearly stated that power has been given to equally violate the law and not to protect the law. And such powers cannot be given. So, if we acknowledge that the resolution of Parliament was correct, then it would give powers to individuals to violate the law. So it was wrong. That was the ruling given by the Supreme Court. Therefore, Honorable Speaker, from this court ruling, the sovereignty of the people has been protected and their right of franchise has been protected through this court ruling. So therefore, Honorable Speaker, misinterpretation should not be given about this ruling. The arbitrary power of the President to dissolve the Parliament was taken away from the 19th Amendment, and it was a progressive step, and it was a historic step. And if not, we would not be able to meet in this manner. If the President had such powers, then we would not be able to meet today. And we would not be able to discuss socio-economic problems of the people. Then the second issue, Honorable Speaker, it has been very clearly stated that Article 12(1) of the Constitution cannot be violated by the President.
Has been issued outside legal limits and has resulted in a violation of petitioner's rights, both in his capacity as a parliamentarian legitimately elected to represent the people and in the capacity of a citizen who is entitled to be protected from any arbitrary exercise of power. Furthermore, for the reasons set out above, I hold that the petitioner's rights guaranteed under Article 12(1) of the Constitution have been violated by the issue of proclamation filed with the petition in SCFR 351/2018 March P1 and make order quashing the said proclamation and declaring the said proclamation Mark P1 null, void, ab initio and without force or effect in law.
So, Honorable Speaker, the Supreme Court has very clearly stated that nobody can be allowed to violate Article 12(1) of the Constitution. It is a very important article which should not be violated by anybody. Therefore, Honorable Speaker, this is a historic ruling. This, I would request you to include this in the Hansard, because it is for the first time in the history in our country the purported power of the executive presidency and this ruling has protected the rights of franchise of the people, and it has also reiterated that the all rights of people should be respected and safeguarded. Honorable Speaker, within this 50-day period, we saw many things. There have been many incidents, and I don't think that we should talk about them. But during this 50-day period, all the citizens of this country realized the dangers of executive presidency. And they also realized now, Honorable Deputy Speaker will take the chair. Please continue. Honorable Deputy Speaker, within this 50-day period, the people of this country, the people of this country learned through the experiences which they would not have been able to learn even by reading hundreds of books. So, in a way, this crisis made people aware. We know that it was dangerous in the economic and socio-economic fronts, and in other ways, it was dangerous. But people were able to realize. People through their own experiences were able to learn about the rights, their rights. The party of the Honorable Rawfaqi Muslim Congress, the party of the Honorable Rishad Bathuddin. Then the Tamil political parties which represent plantation people, they had cast doubts about the abolition of the executive presidency, and they thought that minorities would be subject to injustices if the executive presidency was abolished, and they thought that the executive presidency is the guardian of the rights of the minorities. But through the experience, they were able to realize it was not so. And they were able to realize that the executive presidency cannot protect the rights of the minorities. Under Article 12.1 of the Constitution, it has been stated that the rights of all people should be protected irrespective of their ethnicity. But the president violated Article 12.1. So the executive president blatantly violated the equal rights of the people, their fundamental rights. He blatantly violated the fundamental rights of the Tamil people, the Muslim people, the Sinhala people. Therefore, the minorities should not continue to believe in the executive presidency. They should not think that it will be able to protect the rights of the minorities. No, it is not so. We have very clearly witnessed it in the north, in the south, in the plantation sector. As a result of the decision taken by the president, the rights of all people, the Sinhala people, the Muslim people, the Tamil people, were taken away. Their rights were violated. So earlier, the minorities. So I would like to appeal to the minorities that they should not further believe in the executive presidency. And from this experience, we have learned that a lesson. Similarly, Honorable Deputy Speaker. Another question has been posed about the executive presidency. It is stated that the executive presidency would help to unite the country. If not, the country would be broken up to several parts. And they also stated that if there is no executive presidency, the country would become anarchic. So, but we now know it was the executive presidency that pushed the country towards anarchy during this 50-day period. It was the executive presidency which pushed the country towards anarchy. We are not concerned about the person who is holding the post, whether it is the Ranjit Prem Das, Jayachar Vardhan, Maithripal Sirisena. It doesn't matter. You know, many people thought that Maithripal Sirisena would not take arbitrary decisions. Various allegations were made against him. It was said that he was not strong enough to hold the post. So this is it is not the individual, but this post which has created problems. In fact, our criticism is with regard to this post. It's not about individuals. Even if Honorable Ranil Wickremesinghe sit in this chair tomorrow, once again there will be problems in the country. We know the Venerable Mahasangha, then power greedy politicians have been. The Mahasangha has been misled by these power-hungry politicians, and therefore they think that this country, the devolution of the executive presidency would lead to the division of the country. Therefore, we would like to appeal to the Venerable Mahasangha, the Chanthamukti Peramuna, we have never extended any support for the division of the country. It was the Chanthamukti Peramuna which took the decision to merge the northern and eastern provinces. We know that now various falsehoods are being propagated. Now it was due to the intention of the Chanthamukti Peramuna that the northern and eastern provinces could be merged. We will never allow this country to be divided. With our lives, we have made interventions. Even at the risk of our lives, we have made interventions to protect the unitary status of this country. Therefore, we will never allow this country to be divided. In the 20th Amendment that we have moved, there isn't a single word, there isn't a single sentence that would help to divide the country. So we would like to challenge to anybody, if there are any article in the 20th Amendment that would lead to a division of the country. Now, we know that even under the 20th Amendment, the President would be able to appoint the governors of the provincial councils. And if a single province or several provinces declare unilateral independence, then the President has powers to dissolve such provincial councils. For that purpose, we don't need executive presidency. We don't need the reports of executive presidency. For that purpose, we have not touched that power under the 20th Amendment. Therefore, there is no question of the division of the country. Therefore, bogies should not be created. The people should not be incited in order to gain petty political mileage. We are in a position now where we have to move forward national unity. The Janata Vidhi Parishat has stood for the rights of the minorities, and we have stood for the rights of all communities. And we should protect and promote national unity, whether we are Sinhalese or Tamils or Muslims or Burghers. We are people of one single country. We all have red blood in our bodies. There are no different colors of blood in our bodies. Therefore, for all this, first of all, we have to protect the freedom and independence of the people. When democracy is protected and when democracy is upheld, then the rights of the Tamil people and Muslim people would be protected. And similarly, if democracy is protected, the rights of single people will be protected if we uphold democracy. And so we are going to uphold democracy, and we would not like to see power concentrated on one single individual. Therefore, some people have taken arbitrary decisions, and these powers have been used to protect those who have been involved in corruption, nepotism, and other nefarious activities. Therefore, Honorable Speaker, now the Tamil and the Muslim people would think they have been led to believe that the abolition of the executive presidency would cause injustice to them, and then the majority Sinhala Buddhist people, not the Sinhala Catholic people, there is opinion about the Sinhala Buddhist people that the abolition of the executive presidency would lead to the division of the country. That is also a misconception. That is another fallacy. We can protect the rights of the people, we can protect the fundamental rights of the people by taking away the powers of the executive presidency. Today we know that the constitution has been violated by the president, and it is the executive president who has violated the equal rights of people. Therefore, we will be able to ensure equal rights to all people by abolishing the executive presidency, and we have an experience in this regard from the period of Chajayawardhana, from the period of R. Premadas, and from the period of Chandra Kumar Tunga, Mahinda Rajapaksa, and I don't want to repeat the things that took place in the past. Now we have to move forward, and we have to understand this reality, and we have to understand as to how this can be passed within the existing reality. Now, some people claim that we have moved this 20th Amendment in order to hand over powers to Ranil Wickremesinghe because he will not be able to win a presidential election. That was why the GVP is paving the way for him to become the executive presidency. That is why they have introduced this 20th Amendment to hand over powers to Ranil Wickremesinghe. But those who criticize the 20th Amendment, the proposed 20th Amendment, then they would see that it would be more beneficial to Honorable Mahinda Rajapaksa than Ranil Wickremesinghe. Now we know that under the present system, Honorable Mahinda Rajapaksa would not be able to contest the presidential election. But if the 20th Amendment is passed, Honorable Mahinda Rajapaksa would not, Honorable Mahinda Rajapaksa would be able to contest the elections and become the Prime Minister of this country once again without forming, with, he'll be able to officially be elected as the Prime Minister of this country. If the people of this country are willing, then he will be able to become the Prime Minister of this country. So he would be able to become the Prime Minister once again through the 20th Amendment. If he wants, he also can become a nominal president. There is no obstacle in the 20th Amendment for that. So only if the 20th Amendment is passed, and only if the abolition, only if the executive presidency is abolished, that he would be able to contest future elections only under the 20th Amendment. Now he wanted to be the Prime Minister. Now he has lost the Prime Minister's post, and now he's also about to lose the post of the opposition leader, and finally he would also be lose his parliamentary seat. So therefore, if we passed the 20th Amendment, he would be able to contest future elections as the Prime Ministerial candidate, and he would be able to contest future elections, and if the people are willing, then he would be able to become the Prime Minister. So therefore, Honorable Mahinda Rajapaksa would be, gain more benefits from the 20th Amendment than Honorable Ranil Wickremesinghe. Therefore, they must extend their support for the abolition of the executive presidency. I believe that these incidents are quite sufficient for him to understand the situation. If not Honorable Deputy Speaker, we have witnessed what happened in this country during the past few weeks. We know that when somebody who is sitting, if he falls, then he would not be hurt that much. But when a person standing falls, then he would suffer more serious injuries. And but if a person is dashed, then all his limbs would be broken. So this is exactly what happened. If he was sitting, then if he had a fall, he would not have suffered much. If he was standing and if he had a fall, then he would have only suffered minor injuries. But he was dashed on the ground and all his limbs had been broken. So it was done by the executive president. There is no doubt about that. It was done by Maithripala Sirisena. Maithripala Sirisena dashed Mahinda Rajapaksa on the ground. So everybody knows it. He was politically destroyed. Honorable Maithripala Sirisena would not be able to physically lift him. But politically, we know that when we compared the body of the Honorable Maithripala Sirisena, he would not be able to lift Honorable Mahinda Rajapaksa, but he politically lift him and dashed him on the ground. Therefore, Honorable Deputy Speaker, now he has learned a very good lesson. Therefore, I believe that he should learn a lesson from this. Honorable Chiang Semusing, you are a new member of Parliament. I am talking about your leader. I'm only trying to help you. If your leader will only have a chance of becoming a future leader, only if the executive presidency is abolished. So let's allow people to do that. The parliament should not block it. If it is passed through 2/3 majority in parliament, and then now in keeping with the decision given by the Supreme Court, we have to go for a referendum, and we are ready to go for a referendum. Now, people are ready to extend their support for the abolition of the executive presidency. So let's imagine if the flower but bones, Mahinda Rajapaksa, and no one else, then even then, let's disregard the constitutional matters about this. If the supporters of Porto, if they want to nominate Mahinda Rajapaksa as the Prime Minister candidate, then they would be able to do that only through the 20th Amendment. So this should be understood clearly.
Don't be deceived by Honorable Gamampira. Your party is Flower Bud Party, so you can create the opportunity to your candidate. And I'm telling this in good faith. So let's pass this motion. We have moved this as a private member's motion. The government can clearly state its stance soon.
So if there is any amendment to be made, then let's move those amendments as well. But our intention is to change the core of this position. And if there is an amendment, then we are ready to include it in this motion as well. And we'll pass this in this house. And it would pave the way for the pollution of arbitrary executive presidency. And it would prevent the incidents that took place, unprecedented incidents took place during the last 150 days in the future as well. And I hope that our leaders have the wisdom to see this vision. Thank you very much. Honorable Malik Samarikrama, you have the opportunity.
Dear members of this House, I would like to start by reminding ourselves that abolishing the executive presidency was a cornerstone of the Yahapalana government's plan, guided by the late Venerable Sobhita Thero, and it is now time to recommit to that goal. It is safe to say that it has never been clearer why we need to abolish the system of executive presidency. The events of the last 51 days in our country should leave us in no doubt that the concentration of power in one office is a recipe for disaster. After having seen the ill effects of this, we cannot turn a blind eye. We have to act now. We have seen how this august house, the parliamentary branch of government, function to uphold democracy and due process, despite the heinous act of the executive. We have seen how the speaker courageously upheld due process and amidst an onslaught from the executive as well as some members of this very house. We have seen how the judiciary upheld the supreme law of the land, our constitution, amidst an attack on it from the executive. Our country's democratic institutions will only be strong if we have a meaningful distribution of power between the three branches of the presidency, the parliament, and the judiciary. It is about making sure that one person doesn't wield all this authority. And as we saw over the last 51 days, they hold the country hostage. The executive president must go. An argument that has been put forward for a while is that a strong state requires a strong executive president. But look at the last 51 days. What kept this state strong was a strong legislature and its speaker, and the strong and independent judiciary, not the presidency. In fact, the actions of the presidency weakened our state, not strengthened it. Weakened it economically, weakened it in the international community. We need to bust some myths today. The executive presidency does not lead to a stronger state. The executive presidency does not strengthen the unitary status of our country. The executive presidency does not lead to a more stable government. We must bring primacy to this parliament, the elected representatives of the people of our country, from all corners of our country, and all ethnicities and all religions. It is clearly apparent from this crisis that the executive presidency is posing a serious threat towards the strength of the legislature. And all of us members of this legislature need to double down and commit to abolishing the executive presidency. We commenced on this path through the 19th Amendment to the Constitution, which reigned in the absolute powers of the executive and brought more of it to Parliament. And from the last 51 days, you can see how vital this amendment was. And now it is time to complete the job to abolish the executive presidency. It has never been clearer the dangers of concentrating so much power in the hands of one office, rather than distributing more power to the parliament of people's representatives. We should not let go this renewed opportunity, this renewed rationale. I call upon all members of this House to vote for this motion and campaign in the country when a referendum is brought in to abolish this executive. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Garu.
Honourable Jayapati Vikramaratna. Honourable Speaker. The issue regarding the executive presidency surfaced before the 1972 constitution. The constitutional council, which was formed before that, then opposition leader and then deputy leader of the UNP, Honorable J.R. Jayawardena, said that executive presidency should be introduced, but Honorable Dadlisena Nayaka, who was from the same party, he strongly opposed it. Although he gave opportunity Honorable Jayawardena to introduce the motion, as a party they were against it. He said that although it is successful in countries such as France and other foreign countries, it won't be successful in Sri Lanka. And then Prime Minister Honorable Sirimavo Bandaranaike had the opportunity to become the executive president easily with the majority she enjoyed. Therefore, the SLFP was always against the executive presidency, but supported the strengthening the legislature. And Honorable Colvin R. De Silva, he said that do not create two heads of the government which creates one position where the power concentrate on the president and another counterpost, and it would create a major issue in the nation. And in 1978, when Honorable J.R. Jayawardena became the president after the 1977 election, he moved in amendment to the 1972 constitution, and in 1978 created the world's most strongest executive presidency in the world. And Honorable Enam Pereira, he wrote some articles to the Nation newspaper, and he published a series of booklet. He also wrote some articles to the Daily News as well, and he cautioned because the statements of Honorable N.M. Pereira are quoted when we talk about the executive presidency. And Honorable Srima also stated that the executive presidency will be above the judiciary and the legislature as well as the people. And afterwards, in every election, one of the slogans of opposition parties was to abolish the executive presidency. And in 1994, we hoped that we would be able to abolish the executive presidency. The constitutional reform process, which initiated in 1994, it dragged on. And since the UNP and the SLFP was much concerned about the elections,
they did not, they were not concerned about abolishing the post, and we missed the opportunity. And in 2001, we were able to remove certain powers of the executive presidency from the 17th Amendment. There were some issues regarding the stability of the of our government, and the JVP moved a motion, and the civil organizations, especially the professional organizations, they drafted a document, and the 17th Amendment was based on that. And some of the powers of the executive presidency was removed, and for the first time we were able to form a constitutional council which comprised of seven civil persons, civilians, and three politicians. That includes the speaker, the prime minister, and the opposition leader. And it made the appointments with regard to the Supreme Court. The approval of the Constitutional Council was mandatory. And we were able to limit the powers of the executive presidency to a certain extent and create a democratic rule. We made a minor progress on certain issues, and in 2009, all this were reversed from the 18th Amendment, and the Constitutional Council was abolished, and a parliamentary council was established which had no purpose. There was a restriction on the times of tenure. It was removed as well. I believe it paved the way for the most strongest executive presidency of the world. And in the worst times, I don't want to elaborate on certain matters. The rulings that were given by the Chief Justice and the Court of Appeal, the process that was followed it was improper, and the CJ was removed, and then we moved to the 19th Amendment. We went to every village when the incumbent president became a common candidate. He said that this would be the final presidential election, and we agreed that we will carry out the process without a referendum. 31 members were expected, but only 6 to 7 members came, so we did not have 2/3 majority. We only had a very minor majority, and we agreed to move the 19th Amendment, but we were able to achieve certain victories. We were able to remove certain powers of the executive presidency, and we were able to establish independent commissions, and the number of members appointed to those commissions, and the Human Rights Commission was recognized, the National Procurement Commission was established, and the appointments made to those commissions . The 19th Amendment says that the appointments should have the recommendation of the Constitutional Council, and those appointments should be approved by the Supreme Court. But we were not able to change the composition. There were three persons who were not politicians, and seven politicians. When
we discuss the amendment, the opposition forward some matters and some conditions, and one of the conditions was three citizens and seven politicians should be appointed, but we had no choice, and I was not a member, parliamentarian. Honorable Ranil Wickremesinghe requested, asked me and C.J. Veliyamuna, how can I face Venerable Madhulwar Sobhithera? And I telephoned Venerable Sobhithera, and the Thera said that it's okay, I agree to that condition. And subsequently, we were able to achieve the a process to a certain extent, and a constitutional council was established. While the discussions were ongoing, His Excellency the President, he pledged at the cremation of Venerable Sobhithera. What we said at every village, the President pledged to abolish the Executive Presidency. The members of the Steering Committee, the SLFP members, they were also of the view that we agreed to abolish the Executive Presidency. And later, they said that they won't abolish the post, but certain powers will be removed, and that is why we could not expedite the process. And another matter, Honorable Deputy Speaker, when we removed the certain powers of the Executive Presidency, the entire government, including me, should be responsible. We allow the President to act as a President which existed before the 19th Amendment. When a ruling is given, then that is changed after certain news reports are published, and it became a habit, and it ended on 26th of October, which with the event that took place on 25th of October, a finance bill was passed and regulations were passed. The NCM, which was moved against the government, was defeated from a majority of 46 votes. So while there was a clear majority to Honorable Ranil Wickremesinghe, while violating the constitution, he was removed from that position. And subsequently, Honorable Rajapaksa was appointed as the Prime Minister, who did not have a simple majority. And subsequently, we saw six times continuously he was defeated, and he was unable to show his majority. And subsequently, the parliament was prorogued, and then the parliament was dissolved. His Excellency the President, he said that he received legal consultations from prominent legal experts. We don't want to ask who are those consultants, because he has the right to obtain any consultation from any legal expert. However, this matter was taken to the Supreme Court, and a three-member bench issued an interim order and prevented the parliament being dissolved.
and they requested for a 7-member bench. 7 judges were appointed, and all of them had been appointed by Honorable Mahinda Rajapaksa or His Excellency Maithripala Sirisena, all of them, the 7 members. But due to the democratic environment we created through the 19th Amendment, due to the independency we created in the judicial sector, the Supreme Court gave a unanimous decision, a ruling. Some joked us that the comma is missing, the full stop is missing. Yes, we accept that there were certain inconsistencies. But when you interpret a constitution, the constitutional unity is essential, and our argument was accepted by the SC. Everybody talks about certain articles, 33A, 33C. Those persons made arguments about those articles, but finally the Supreme Court gave a unanimous decision. Why did we achieve this progress or victory? When an application was filed for a quo warranto before the Appeals Court of Appeal, an interim order was issued against the then Prime Minister Mahinda Rajapaksa and his cabinet, and Mahanayaka of a certain Nikaya, they said that they tried to influence the courts, saying that certain rulings should not be given by certain courts, but finally the Supreme Court said that before 4.5 years pass, the parliament cannot be dissolved in terms of the 19th Amendment, and it also declared that it is a violation of fundamental rights. So it is evident that the Constitution has been violated intentionally. The Attorney General stated that, Honorable Deputy Speaker, we had limited the certain powers enjoyed by the President, and the official capacities of the President can be challenged. The Attorney General, it is regretting, Attorney General saying certain statements. It is true that he appears before the, he appears on behalf of the President, but this argument was rejected as well, and the people achieved a massive victory. We stand up here after 51 days of experience, and it was a very bad experience. So we have experienced how dangerous this position can be. So it is essential to abolish the executive presidency, but that does not mean that all the powers should be removed. The powers that centers within the position should be vested with him. If the president is elected from the people, then there can be issues. One of the political analysts, Aravind Lightheart, he said that multi-ethnic society requires a multi-party mechanism which takes a decision. Don't appoint the president directly, as he would say that although he can say that the Prime Minister is appointed by winning one of the seats, but he has received votes of the entire country. And some are arguing that the executive presidency should prevail. For capitalistic development, an authoritative rule is required. But I am happy with the UNP. After 20 odd years, the UNP has changed its stance, and Honorable Malik Samarikma expressed his party's stance clearly today. But from the inception, that is from 1972, certain parties who were against it, now they are of the view that it should be protected. Those group who are demanding that executive presidency should prevail, they are extremist Sinhalese groups. I am proud of them and I commend them because they directly say that their majority can prevail if the opposition prevail. And in a conference held in 2006, the extremists have clearly stated this. And this person, he said, made such a statement.
We go in the same bus. We share the same teapot.
And when my turn came, I said,
that's teapot, but you are not prepared to share state power. Obala.
I said that although you are ready to share the teapot, you do not want to share the state power. So these persons see the executive presidency as a position which can help them to prevail the authoritative rule of the Sinhalese. And after January 2015, we saw everybody wants to become the president. Some say that executive presidency should prevail, and minor ethnic groups, they had the view that they have certain advantages. But I guess they have changed their stance, and in 1992, these minor ethnic groups, they supported the executive presidency, but when certain incidents took place in 1986, Honorable J.R. Jayawardena, who received the votes, he had to impose curfew and to restore normals in the country. The minor groups, they voted in favor of the common candidate. And what was their experience?
Now, there is reconciliation, it's better, but whether their aspirations have been fulfilled. So I believe the minor ethnic groups would reconsider the situation again. In the last 50 days, the situation that everyone warned us against prevailed. So it has to be changed. I, as a member of Lanka Sama Samaja Party, opposed the executive presidency all the time. And now I am a member of the United Leftist Front, and we support the 20th Amendment moved by the UPA. We are for a new election system. a new constitution, a new chapter on human fundamental rights and social and economic rights, not limiting to human rights, and children's and women's rights, disabled rights, and senior citizens' rights, and citizens' rights to environment, including all that. We seek a new chapter to the constitution on fundamental rights, and a constitution that will provide a long-term solution for the ethnic issue. If that is not done, if it is delayed, then we are ready to support the 20th Amendment, which proposes abolishing the executive presidency as an interim solution. And at the same time, we should not stop there, but we should aspire to have a new constitution. I do not expect to go into more details. Executive presidency, regarding that, our experiences are very bad. Within the last 51 days, the experience we have had, even the ordinary citizens, even the people who lacked any understanding or knowledge about this, I believe according to their experience, there is consensus among the majority that this has to be changed. Thanking you for giving me this opportunity. I wish to conclude my speech. Thank you, Honorable Sumandiran.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Deputy Speaker, for the opportunity to say a few words on the adjournment motion presented by the Janata Vimukti Peramuna. This issue of abolition of executive presidency, as all the speakers before me have adverted to, has been there for quite some time. It has not just been there, but it has had the endorsement of our people at every presidential election. And so the mandate of the people to abolish executive presidency has been with us for quite some time. In fact, in 2015, when the presidential election was held, we thought the executive presidency as a system of government will be abolished very soon. But unfortunately, through the 19th Amendment, we were able to do only part of what needed to be done. And if one remembers the day 19th Amendment was passed, repeatedly this House was assured that through a new constitution, whatever that couldn't be accomplished in the 19th Amendment would be addressed and accomplished. Executive presidency, or rather the abolition of executive presidency, is an important element of that. This has dragged for some time, although in the process that we have to draft a new constitution for the country, we have in the interim report suggested that the executive presidency be abolished. In point of fact, at the in arriving at the interim report, in the committee discussions, there was a point at which all parties actually agreed to the abolition. However, subsequently, when political parties made their positions known on various issues, some of the political parties, namely Sri Lanka Muslim Congress, All Ceylon Makkal Congress, and the Tamil Progressive Alliance, made certain reservations with regard to the abolition of the executive presidency. The very recent incidents that have happened in this country, I'm sure, have now caused those parties also to reconsider their position with regard to executive presidency. In fact, they have said so, and we should now, without any further delay, abolish executive presidency. But it is not only the abolition of executive presidency. The new constitution that has been promised must be brought. That's a promise to the people. And as an integral part of that, the abolition of the executive presidency also must happen. While the process to enact a new constitution was being delayed, we saw various other events overtaking us. And the conduct of the executive president himself is an important part of that. And so we are here today after almost 2 months of a constitutional crisis that was triggered off by the executive president. The executive president who purported to exercise powers which he did not have, perhaps laboring under the misconception or under wrong advice or the habit that had been formed by the constitution as it obtained prior to the 19th amendment, His Excellency the President made certain moves. On the 26th of October, first he purported to remove the Prime Minister in office and purported to appoint another in his place. Now that power that the President had prior to the 19th Amendment was specifically removed from the Constitution through the 19th Amendment. Article 47 enumerated as ABC three ways in which a sitting Prime Minister lost that post. 47A was if the President removed the Prime Minister from office. So the President was empowered to remove the Prime Minister from office. That clause, that Article 47A, or 47 rather, now finds place in the Constitution after the 19th Amendment as 46(2). As 46(2). And in 46(2), there are only two situations that are listed, instead of the three that was there prior to that. And the one that has been taken out or removed is the power of the President to remove a Prime Minister. So, in the 19th Amendment, quite clearly, the President's power to remove a Prime Minister at will was repealed, was taken out, and the President no longer has that power. Nevertheless, that act was done. This House subsequently on the 14th of November declared that act to be unconstitutional and illegal. Thereafter, His Excellency prorogued Parliament. He first named 16th of November as the date on which Parliament was to convene subsequent to prorogation. However, subsequently advanced the date to 14th November. But in the meantime, on the 9th of November, he issued certain proclamations. By a proclamation, he purported to dissolve Parliament. Now again, that was a power His Excellency the President had prior to the 19th Amendment. After the expiration of 1 year, if the previous parliament hadn't been sooner dissolved, the president could dissolve parliament after 1 year. But in the 19th amendment, the situation changed drastically, and the power of the president to dissolve parliament at will was circumscribed, was limited, was restricted, and he couldn't dissolve parliament for a period of 4.5 years from the first sitting of a parliament unless the parliament itself, by a resolution adopted by 2/3, requested the president to do so. Now these are all very clearly spelt out in black and white. Unfortunately though, disregarding these clear and specific provisions that had been brought in by the 19th Amendment, His Excellency purported to dissolve Parliament. And several members of this House and other citizens challenge such act of the President in the Supreme Court. Now that again was made possible because in the 19th Amendment the immunity that had, the blanket immunity that the President had previously had been relaxed, and a citizen could invoke the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court by a fundamental rights petition against the official acts of the President. Now that is a application or applications that were heard by the Supreme Court, eventually by a bench of 7 judges, and the unanimous conclusion of those 7 judges is that the President had violated the Constitution when he purported to dissolve Parliament before the expiration of a period of 4.5 years from the date of first sitting of this Parliament. During this process, many people made comments about the 19th Amendment to the Constitution, saying it was hurriedly brought, it was ill-conceived, badly drafted, etc. But if one reads the judgments of the Supreme Court, one can rest assured that there is no such thing. The 19th Amendment is lucid, clear, unambiguous, and had made deep inroads into the powers of the executive president, as promised to the people before His Excellency Maithripala Sirisena contested the 2015 presidential election. In point of fact, in November 2014, when Honorable Maithripala Sirisena addressed a press conference and declared himself to be the joint opposition candidate, the first time he made that declaration, he made 3 promises to the country. The first of those promises is that he would abolish executive presidency. That was the first promise. The second promise was that he would reform the parliamentary election system, and the third was that he would appoint Ranil Wickremesinghe as Prime Minister. Those are the 3 promises that candidate Maithripala Sirisena gave the people of this country in November 2014. And through the 19th Amendment, although we did make serious strides in the direction of abolishing executive presidency, in my opinion, Honorable Deputy Speaker, what we have today can hardly be called executive presidency if you compare it with what we had prior to the 19th Amendment. But unfortunately, no one quite appreciated what had been done through the 19th Amendment. There is very little that the President can do by himself after the 19th Amendment. Even with regard to governance, even with regard to his role in cabinet, his role with regard to appointment of ministers, assignment of subjects and functions, there is very little that he can do unilaterally or as he pleases. 19th Amendment has brought a situation where the President and the Prime Minister must work together. And if they don't, we would have a situation of standoff as we had. So 19th Amendment was only a stopgap, was only a initiative. It could only be something temporary until you did it in full. So if abolition of the executive presidency is a program, we've done halfway or maybe a little further than halfway, but it must be done in full. You can't continue with the 19th Amendment being part of our constitution for too long. We will face situations like we faced in the last month or so. So this must change. As Honorable Dr. Vikramaratna pointed out, there can't be two centers of power. Now we have under the 19th Amendment. And that must be rectified. And in rectifying that, we must give effect to the mandate that the people of this country had given this parliament. Not only to this parliament, they have been giving this mandate for quite some time, for 2 decades. But at least in this parliament, that must be accomplished. That must be honored. And abolition of executive presidency must necessarily form an important part of the new constitution that we enact in this parliament, or through a process of this parliament and a referendum. That too is a promise, and that must be accomplished. Many people think that the time has run out, the opportunity has been missed, that it is now not possible to enact a new constitution. I don't think so. I think the lessons that we learnt in the last 50 odd days will be useful in members of this house and the citizens of this country, the voters of this country, deciding on the enactment of a new constitution. The views of the country, the experience of this country over the last few days or last month or so should not be wasted, should not be in vain. There have been some sideshows also, and I'm sure the citizenry has watched those sideshows also. The sideshows are that in this whole process, anybody who does not belong to the majority community has no place or no role to play in the national life of this country. That is a not so subtle message that keeps getting communicated to the country. So for instance, if I, Subandhiran, plays a role with regard to these matters, that is a message that is given. Hidden behind that is the message, how dare he, a Tamil, play a role in the national life of our country? That's a question. Most often unarticulated question. Some articulate it also. And these sideshows have also been watched by our people. And our people, and when I say our people, I particularly mean the majority community of this country, detest that kind of communalism that is being spewed out venomously by certain politicians. We've had not just these last 2 months' experience, we've had the experience of 3-decade-long bloody war in this country. No one wants to return to those days. And if that is to be achieved, then one must realize that every citizen of this country, whatever be his ethnicity, his language, where he lives, he has an equal stake in the affairs of this country. There is no second class citizen of this country. All are equal is a proposition that I think our people have embraced. And they know the value of that. And that is why I say, when in these sideshows, these attempts are made to whip up base communal feelings, our people will reject them. And reject they must. And when a new constitution is presented as, amongst other things, a solution to the national question, the Tamil national question that has plagued this country for 7 long decades, we will have a verdict from our people. Not just from people who are numerically in the minority in this country, but from the majority community itself, rejecting these tribal, communal notions and endorsing that everyone in this country is equal and they must have due place and the facility to participate as an equal citizen in this country in all its affairs. You cannot be said to be disabled if you are a Tamil or a Muslim or a Christian or a Hindu. Somehow inferior. Numbers don't give you status. Numbers don't give anyone any higher status. It is the commitment of a person to that country that gives him status. Our people have repeatedly, through democratic elections, inform this country that we are willing to live within a united and undivided, maybe even an indivisible country. And that therefore, the others must acknowledge that readiness, must clasp that hand that has been stretched out by us. But if you don't do that, if anybody tells me I have no place to play a role in the national affairs of this country, that person cannot tell me that I must remain in this country. If I am not an equal citizen of this country, I cannot be held by force to be a citizen of this country. I would have every right to demand that I go my separate way. So the choice is that of the majority community. We have said very clearly what our position is. And by our acts and deeds, even in the last few days, we have shown that we are willing to participate and live as full citizens of this country. The choice is with those who don't want to accept that offer. They are the ones who will be responsible if the country doesn't progress, if it regresses. And so on this opportunity, when we discuss the very important issue of abolition of executive presidency, Mr. Deputy Speaker, I want to bring to the attention of this House and the country that must be a necessary part of the new constitution that we make, because the constitution is a social contract between the peoples who live in this country. So far we have not had a social contract to which all the peoples of this country have consented to. And we still have that opportunity. Time may be short, but quite sufficient for us to do that. And I appeal to all that we don't squander that opportunity, that we use that opportunity, that we abolish executive presidency and make a new constitution for the country where all the people will be equal and share power in an equal way. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Rauf Hakim. Before that, Honorable Deputy Chairman of Committee will take chair.
Bismillah Rahman Rahim. Gaurava Pradikulukalin Tavis.
Honorable Deputy Chairman of Committees. Now, you are the chair at this house at this moment. J.P. Broughton adjournment motion today. So I'd like to share my observations in this regard, and I am very happy to share my observations at this juncture. There was a turning point in the history of Sri Lankan politics. Today, Parliament is convened without any problem. For the last 51 days, we have suffered a lot. We faced many dilemmas. And today, now the Parliament is met smoothly. Now, we got an opportunity to take forward a government without any problems. And there are many elements who join hands with us. And at this juncture, I would like to extend my sincere thanks to all those who joined with us and the civil society members and others who want to protect the democracy of this country and those who raised their voice to protect the democracy of this country, the general public. And my sincere thanks goes to all of them.
Today we are discussing this motion that pertains to the question of the abolition of the executive presidency. Since 1982, successive presidential candidates have campaigned for a mandate to abolish this executive presidency. Every one of them have also succeeded in breaching that mandate and attempting to contest a subsequent presidential election, as well as one president quite recently brought about the 18th Amendment to perpetually remain the president of this country. So the lure, the greed to retain power, particularly executive power, is such that everyone who promised to abolish the presidency succeeded in not abolishing it, but doing the reverse by attempting to retain it and contest it once again, as well as to attempt to be in office perpetually. So that is the history of the abolition of the executive presidency in this country. Now, more particularly, on two occasions where the directly executive president could not control parliament and a different party came to power in parliament, it resulted in serious duality in power. There had been two centers of power. We experienced this between 2001 and 2004. Where Her Excellency Chandrika Bandar Nayaka Kumaratunga, who was elected to her second term, had to survive with a hostile parliament, where the current Prime Minister had the control of parliament. And I was a central figure in that drama, since she lost power in parliament because she expelled me from cabinet and I had to cross the floor of this house, and within 5 months of my going to the opposition, the government lost its majority and she had to dissolved parliament. In the subsequent election, we joined the United National Party as a constituent party of the then United National Front coalition, defeated Her Excellency the President's party, the People's Alliance, and formed the administration. So that period between 2001 and 2004, there was an attempt to survive as a cohabitation government. That experience resulted in serious policy differences between the two sections, particularly the executive president, her party, and those who represented her in parliament, as well as the party which had the majority in parliament, that of the Honourable Ranil Wickremesinghe, who had to be sent out of power in the election in 2004. So this experiment of cohabitation between two centres of power when they are from different political parties is something that we are experiencing now. Once again, I am in this whole drama another central figure by being on the side of Honourable Ranil Wickremesinghe, whereas we elected His Excellency Maithripala Sirisena on a common platform with variety of different partners, both directly and indirectly. The Janata Vimukti Peramuna also joined in the struggle to unseat His Excellency Mahinda Rajapaksa for the very reason that he wanted to perpetuate his power by bringing the 18th Amendment and arrogate to himself all executive power in one single office, which became a serious threat to parliamentary democracy in the country. His Excellency Maithripala Sirisena contested the election on a platform of totally abolishing the executive presidency and with a promise not to seek office once again. But however, his actions for the past 1 year or more has convinced all of us that he is seeking to renege the promise he made to the people, and whether directly or indirectly is attempting to seek power again by wishing at least to become a candidate in the next election. Now yesterday we had a massive rally in the Goldfields Green, perhaps one of the largest rallies that this country ever saw. The people turned up to celebrate the restoration of democracy in the country, since they saw the attempt by the purported government that was installed wrongfully, unconstitutionally, by His Excellency the President in the October 26th swearing-in ceremony. So we have seen quite interestingly the swearing-in ceremonies of prime ministers being done in secret without media being present twice. One to install Mahinda Rajapaksa as the prime minister and the other to swear in Ranil Wickremesinghe as prime minister. Be that as it may, today we are grappling with the situation of whether we should continue with this dual centers of power, and that it is totally unsuitable for the country's democracy. But little forgetting that the electoral systems in the country too plays a role in this. That is why we minority parties were quite keen that we should address the issue of the electoral system as well, together with the abolition of the executive presidency. Yesterday the Prime Minister was seen to suggest that he wants a two-third majority to abolish the executive presidency and install a parliamentary system of governance after removing the executive presidential system. Whereas his deputy leader, Sajith Premadasa, very openly said that we must contest and we must carry on this government up to next October or September, the full term of His Excellency the President, and conduct the next presidential election and then attempt to win that election. So the United National Party itself appears to be having two points of view. And this is a question of some confusion for some of us who are in this coalition. So it is important for us to address that issue. So we need to resolve serious political questions about the electoral system. None of us are in favor of abolishing the current electoral system for the reason that we've experienced the worst in the local government elections, as well as the attempt to change the electoral system, the provincial council. We are now 6 provincial councils, no elections have been held. And the delimitation committee's report has been rejected by this parliament, by even the minister who brought the system voting against it. That was the comedy of errors that we saw being staged in parliament. So therefore, there is a dilemma here. Of course, Janata Vimukti Peramuna wants the executive presidency abolished for the right reasons. But then, we cannot divorce it from the entire constitution and the need to change other things. What about the devolution aspect? And we must also remember that abolishing of the executive presidency cannot be done without a referendum. Because there are entrenched clauses that needs to be changed, and that will certainly attract a referendum, and the Supreme Court will no doubt rule that this question cannot be decided by this parliament alone by a two-third majority. It has to be subjected to a referendum. So if a referendum is to be won, all sections of the country have got to be convinced that we do not want such a system. So people are not interested in piecemeal tinkering with the constitution. What we want is a overall constitutional reform which will replace the constitution with a new system by addressing every issue of contention. That is why we appointed a steering committee, and the steering committee's report has been finalized and we have tabled it in parliament and we were to debate it, and we have perhaps come to some understanding with the Tamil National Alliance that by February that we will introduce it to Parliament to attempt to see whether we can have an endorsement of that with a two-third majority in this House. But there are different points of view. We need to look at whether we can introduce changes to the constitution, you see, with an agreement by all parties. Because everybody now, JVP doesn't want the executive presidential system. Some of you want to change the electoral system. Some have issues pertaining to the devolution aspects of the constitution. His Excellency the President seems to be having serious reservations about the appointment of judges through the Constitutional Council. Having voted for it, having approved it, is now beginning to complain that the senior-most judges don't get appointed since the Constitutional Council is not looking at seniority. Now this is one of those complaints that he sought to make when we were summoned to meet with him when the Prime Minister was sworn in. Everybody listened to what he said. So, now there is a issue concerning three political leaders in the country. One is Maithripala Sirisena, other is Ranil Wickremesinghe.
Yes.
Thank you. Another is the Honorable Mahinda Rajapaksa. The three political leaders are looking at their political future. So this constitution, the abolition of the executive presidency or reintroducing the Westminster system cannot be designed for the whim and fancy of these three individuals. The constitution of this country is not the property of Ranil Wickremesinghe, of Maithripala Sirisena, or Mahinda Rajapaksa. That's an eternal document. That's a sacred book in which this entire country, upon which this entire country's governance is conducted. So therefore, now what is the problem? Now His Excellency Mahinda Rajapaksa wishes to abolish the executive presidency because he cannot contest the next executive presidency. It's an issue for him. Honorable Ranil Wickremesinghe is a leader who doesn't believe in emotional, sentimental propaganda or irrational campaign to mislead the masses. So he sometimes, no, he has not himself contested the last two presidential elections. But then he feels that since he is a political leader who appeals to the intelligentsia of the country but cannot conduct an emotional, sentimental or irrational campaign, so he has always opted to let others contest for the presidential election. So he has an interest in restoring parliamentary democracy back, and so that he can get himself re-elected to parliament and then control executive power through parliament without an executive presidency as a different center of power. And His Excellency Maithripala Sirisena, having promised the country that he is going to abolish the executive presidency, now wants perhaps to look at the second bite of the cherry, as we call it, to try and contest the executive presidency once again, having promised to the country that he will not seek re-election. So, this question cannot be decided on the whim and fancy of individual political leaders, but we have got to look at how the governance have been impacted by having dual centers of power, whether we are able to have proper separation of powers in the context of the executive presidential system. Certainly we saw during the last 51 days the experience of this country was such that an irrational and emotional, sentimental president who is hell-bent on trying to interpret the constitution to his own convenience can seriously jeopardize governance in the country. That is what we experienced. 7 judges of the Supreme Court of this country unanimously held that the constitutional provisions had been violated in removing the installing a prime minister, in dissolving parliament. In the question of installing the prime minister, it was a court of appeal. Then the Supreme Court, in a unanimous verdict, held that the dissolution of parliament was unconstitutional. And with that became, at least indirectly, the issue pertaining to the majority of parliament deciding the fate of prime minister was put to rest. So all these complications arise out of this particular issue. Now in the way, if we are to say in Sinhala language, api Sinhala kiyenawa na,
if we say it in
Singh Helena, the 50-day struggle we engaged in recently, actually we saw His Excellency the President was the chief actor, the main actor of that, and nothing come out of his act. So it is like this.
And at least through the front door you have come and taken the opposition leader's position. But never try it through the back door. You try to grab power of prime ministerial office through the back door. Now you have come through the front door, taking the... But out of your advice, the former president, I hope he will not become the former member of parliament. I mentioned this morning, there is a serious issue about, let alone being the opposition leader, whether he is a member of parliament has to be decided by a select committee of this house, ultimately. You see, no, ambitious or not, I am not being personal here. I have my deeper respect for the former president. But the question I told him when I met him after this crisis, as to why was he in such a haste? If some of you have pushed him into a serious political debacle. Man who was riding the high wave of popularity has compromised his popularity unnecessarily, trying to grab power through the back door to satisfy a few of you who had misled him. That is his fate. I hope he will see some saner counsel soon and be resigned to his fate as an opposition leader in the coming years to come. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Udaya Kambhampila.
Honorable Deputy Chairman of the Committees, in the previous crisis days, the members of the JVP told us that they are going to move a motion on dissolution of the Parliament. The enthusiasm that they had in moving no confidence motion against Mahinda Rajapaksha had not been there in moving this motion. Honorable Deputy Chairman of the Committees, throughout the recent days, actually we discussed over the abolition of presidency, executive presidency, and we wrote on that and we debated on that, and I'd like to draw the attention of this Supreme House as to what are the hidden agendas behind moving this kind of a motion. United National Party is worried over the elections, and the United National Party is worried to go before the people of this country. In the first place, they postponed the local government elections by 3 years, telling that they want to do the delimitation, and they postponed the provincial council elections, telling different stories. Then they petitioned to the courts, and they did away with the parliamentary election that we wanted to have in this country. And the presidential election will be coming soon, in coming October. Samiti postponed the local government elections, provincial council elections and parliamentary elections. But the presidential election cannot be postponed, showing us the debilitation, because the whole country would be taken as a unit, so that cannot be postponed. So actually JVP and the present government, with the help of the JVP, is trying to obstruct the presidential election that is on the card. They say that they will be in power until 2025. But actually we are not worried over that period of time. You are going to postpone these elections. Actually, it is inevitable that you have to face the presidential election. So you want to postpone the presidential election by way of moving 20th Amendment. JVP actually is worried over the presidential election. They do well in local governments and provincial councils, and they do well in parliamentary elections, and they become the remote controller. But as far as the presidential election is concerned, it is difficult for them to have more votes, and that is the most difficult thing that they have to face. In 1972, Mr. Rohan Vijayveera, the leader of the JVP, came to presidential election, but he couldn't take much votes. In 1999, they contested for presidential election. They couldn't get much votes, and they didn't contest for presidential elections anymore, and they assisted the other candidates. Now, actually, the JVP cannot support any candidate from a major political party. They cannot boycott, and they cannot help the other candidates, and they don't have any alternatives. So the only alternative that they have is the abolition of executive presidency. That is the only result. So what are they going to move after abolition of the presidential executive presidency? They want to go for the Westminster system in 1215. The Magna Carta was moved, and that gave birth to the parliamentary system. And when as the power struggle came in force, the power of the president was reduced, and the parliament was endowed with more power.
Under this Westminster system, in so many countries, a king's rule or a kingship is still maintained. The British introduced Westminster parliamentary system to Sri Lanka. This is a very undeveloped, very low system. This is not people-friendly system. And the best governance system is none other than the executive presidency. In 95 countries of the world, executive presidency reigns, and Westminster system is only reigns in 44 countries. And there is a tendency for the countries to abolish Westminster system. And this is the most popular system, the executive presidency. So, why are we so worried? I was told 10 minutes for me. I began at 5 minutes for 4. My argument that I found was, this is the most popular governance system in the world. Why are you trying to abolish the executive presidency? If it is so harsh, so draconian, it is the US that should abolish executive presidency. For more than 130 years, the executive presidency reigns in US. Nobody cries it is foul. Why? It is the way that we have implemented this executive presidency. It is not the fault of the executive presidency per se. Honorable Jayampati Vikramaratne mentioned that in 1978 the criticism written on the executive presidency, and it was read, it should be read with respect to the 1978 constitution, the first Republican constitution. We also believe that 1978 constitution should be amended appropriately. At that time, executive president was not accountable to the parliament. But we know even in US, a decision taken by the US president is opened for the queries at the Senate. And even the US president could be brought before the judiciary. We saw in the recent past the Bill Clinton, Monica Lewinsky and Paula Jones of sexual harassment cases were filed against the executive president. But in our country it is not so. In even in 19th amendment, that impunity of the executive president was not abolished. Therefore, our opinion is that the executive president is useful for our country. That should be upheld and maintained, and we could amend the 1978 constitution. In the 2010 election manifesto of Honorable Mahinda Rajapaksa in 2010 and 2015 August election manifestos, we have never said that executive president should be abolished. We have mentioned the fact that it should be amended appropriately. That was our stance there, and it was our stance today. Honorable Deputy Chairman of Committees, under the doctrine of separation of powers, the executive presidency is more powerful and more, it is the choice of the most of the people. In US, it is the executive presidency is in operation. The separation of powers is there for a better check and balance system. Executive has been vested in powers. In case to use that power, if the parliament takes arbitrary decisions, and the president has the right to dissolve parliament, then the next step would be to go before the citizens of the country. If the citizens of the country feel the legislature has taken a wrong decision, they would change that mandate. And we know in 2000, Honorable Chandrika dissolved the parliament, and again Honorable Chandrika dissolved parliament 2004. Then the people gave their mandate and they gave the power to the UPFA, sending the UNP government home. So on those two occasions, the decision taken by the executive president has been endorsed by the people through their franchise. Honorable Chairman, there are 97 members in the opposition and I have been given only 10 minutes. We are very much sorry and we are very much frustrated. And finally, I move that the executive presidency should be amended and maintained so. Honorable Gami Javikram Pereira, Honorable Deputy Chairman of Committees, my friend Honorable Uday Gammampila, who dragged my portfolio of Buddha Sasana, now came up with an argument that executive president is very good. It was our creation. I was there in that parliament. Then, Honorable Jaya Javadan said that what he couldn't do, he is unable to do, is to make a female a male and male a female. Don't run away. Don't run away. You are the Buddha Sasana minister, you know. Shame. Shame. I'll give you a robe. I'll give you a saffron color robe. You are my good friend. Please sit and listen to me. Honorable Chairman, in 2005, when Chandrika dissolved the Mahinda Rajapaksa government, the UNP signed an agreement. What was that agreement? That agreement was, you may remember, you were there as an MP. Within 24 hours, Prabhakaran declared that Ranil is a fox, so do not cast your vote. The one person cast his vote and his finger was chopped. And even that case is pending of 800 million bribe. That is how Mahinda Rajapaksa won the election. It was sheer cheating. Now the executive presidency, we saw for last 50 years that took our country backward for about one decade. One tourist magazine said that the best ever destination in the world is Sri Lanka. Soon after, the curse fell upon our country and for 50 days people didn't have any business, they didn't have money in their pockets and people didn't know whether there was a government or not. President Nixon's presidency was impeached for the reason that he had tapped telephones. And today, the executive presidency could not be brought before the judiciary. All the seven bench had been appointed by Honorable Mahinda Rajapaksa. Madam Shirani Bandaranaike, the Chief Justice of that day, was evicted from the position, evicted from her office, brought here before the Parliament, and it was dark patch on the history of our parliament, and Honorable Andreyappa was named the chairman of that special committee, and the chief justice position was evicted, and it was due to the 90th amendment the independent commissions were appointed. That is why the Honorable Mahinda Rajapaksa's, Honorable Maithripala Sirisena's judges, that they were appointed by those two presidents, gave a unanimous verdict that the act done by the president was unconstitutional. Why the JVP is bringing in 20th amendment? It is good, but we must also make our views and make amendments necessary. We experience some madness in the process of this rule under executive presidency since 1978, and who covered up so many misappropriations and fraudulent activities of the governments. I hope, Honorable Chairman, India is about 50 times a large population. India got independence in 1947, and we the following year. We know Ambedkar studied at the Oxford. He drafted the Constitution of India. He was an low caste, and he was a chieftain of a state. Honorable Jawaharlal Nehru appointed Ambedkar the Minister of Justice, and still India governed under a single constitution. We are bringing forward the 20th amendment. This is a joke. Even at the 20th amendment, we should stop this mockery. We must uphold the constitution as it is. I reiterate the fact that it is not in our attire. The supremacy of the parliament is maintained. The innocent people select their representatives. We are not rulers, but the servants. Servants who are accountable for the constituents, whether it is UNPN, JVP, or Pohottua, or TNA. Had anyone committed any fraudulent activity, they all should be brought before the courts. And for 3.5 years, our process of bringing the culprits into book were very much lethargic, very much in a slow pace. Honorable Vijayadasa Rajapaksa appointed the Honorable Vijayadasa Rajapaksa delayed that process, and Honorable Talata when she became the minister, she appointed 3 special courts, and at the time of that calamity, on that particular day, I was there, next to me was Mangala. They pelted chili powder mixed in a liquid across our eyes, and even the police officers were injured. It was a very ugly incident. It is unbecoming of MPs and Honorable Mahinda Rajapaksa with his son were seated here. I just witnessed some water was sprinkling across the eyes of the PCs. I was there seated in the next to Mangala's, Honorable Mangal Samarabhira. I came to that point where Honorable Anuruddha Sanayake and Vijitha Heriya was seated. I was hit by the Al Quran, which is a very sacred holy book of Islamic faith. In no time, I was attacked with a chili powder mixed in a liquid. I had to take medical treatment for my blurred eyesight. I felt some burning sensation in my eyes. We are taking action against those culprits and we are bringing them before the courts. The MPs should conduct themselves and it should be done in a proper legal manner. Honorable Deputy Chairman of Committees, we are here in Parliament today not to obtain our pension. I can point finger at anybody because I came here in 1977 and I became the district minister in Kurunagala, and in 1988 I became the chief minister of Northwestern province. I introduced a new concept to Wayamba area and I developed it in a rapid manner. In 1988, during Chandrika Bandaranaike's era, I went with Honorable Gamini Athukorla and I resigned from my seat here, and for 2 years I was there in that campaign because they abolished the franchise of the people. Therefore, I have a very pure and supreme duty to represent my area here. Today, Honorable Rani Wickremesinghe has come back as the Prime Minister, and we would form a comprehensive front for the next election campaign. The Cabral and such people are talk of bond scams in Central Bank. Since Rajapaksa era, more than $1,000 billion fraudulent activities have been occurred at the central bank. Such fraudulent transactions should be investigated upon. And Honorable Sarath Thamunagama at that time asked for our signatures. Honorable Sarath Thamunagama got our signature for a daily courthouse. But the Attorney General took a decision otherwise, and after this 19th amendment, I was not having any hard feelings against Honorable Vijayadasa Rajapaksa. I asked why this delay. He said there are 14,000 civil cases. He asked me whether you are asking me to take up these issues first, these cases first. Very next week I queried at the cabinet meeting. I ask Honorable President, please wait a minute. I had the backbone to question the Honorable President. Honorable Vijayasas Rajapaksa said there are nearly 18,000 court cases. How can I give priority for these cases? I ask Honorable President, that is why 62 lakhs of people cast their vote giving the mandate to curb these and to find the culprits and bring them before the books. I told him that I would resign if you don't expedite this process. And I have no any hard feelings against Honorable Vijayadasa Rajapaksa. Honorable President didn't utter a word. I was named the Minister of Buddhadasana and Honorable Talata Athukora was named the Minister of Justice. And she expedited the process. So we must take rapid action. Anybody who had jeopardized the country and who had engaged in unscrupulous fraudulent activities should be punished before the courts. We can't be jokers every day and eternally, Honorable Deputy Chairman of Committees. We must put the full stop. We have to be law-abided. This playground must be a fair playground. This is a very important occasion. The nature would punish us. So, within a unitary country, the Buddhism should be given the due priority. And in 1958, I was a schoolboy of Nalanda College when the single only bill was brought in 1958. Northerners were not allowed to speak Sinhala and Southerners were not allowed to speak Tamil. That is why we are suffering. The public servants are there, they cannot speak English language. Therefore, under a unitary country, Honorable Shehan Semasinghe. Thank you, Honorable Deputy Chairman of Committees. Today, in this adjournment motion to abolish the executive presidency was brought by the JBP. So we would like to remind the JBP that this motion is brought in malafide. It is a fact that Ranil Wickremesinghe would never win the executive presidency through the election. And they have appointed JVP to move this and see the injustice and see the unreasonableness of this motion. The JVP is moving this. Why? They want to appoint a president with the mandate of just 113 members of this parliament. We saw 3 members of the UPFA cross over to the government who were there in the SLFP group meeting this morning. Therefore, Honorable Deputy Chairman of Committees, this is not a matter of the opinion of the 113 members of this parliament. If they are going to appoint the executive president with the mandate of just 113 MPs, UMP may dreaming of becoming or making Ranil Wickremesinghe the president with the support of the JBP. why are you having a fear psychosis of elections? Why cannot you preserve the franchise of more than 150 lakhs of citizens? The JVP and the TNA and the JVP, they are having a fear psychosis for general elections. We anticipated that, as Honorable Ranil Wickremesinghe said, that soon after they declare themselves the executive president and the government, they would call a general election. We thought that they would bring in a motion to dissolve this parliament to hold a general election. Madness. They are talking of a ruling system until 2025. Honorable Deputy Chairman of Committees, we saw when the premiership of Honorable Ranil Wickremesinghe was held up and Honorable Speaker took a decision to bring in all the media to these galleries. Therefore, when Honorable Ranil Wickremesinghe lost his executive, lost his premiership, as you gave the permission to media people to come to this gallery, please allow them to come here ever after. So why don't you allow the media personnel to come here? As the media personnel was allowed to come here to the public gallery, please let them come again. If our speaker is so democratic, I think that he would definitely continue that step. Honorable Chairman, the JVP talk of the 50 days of the period that they criticized that the country ran without a ruling system. But we have seen more than 3 years under UNP ruling. Why didn't the UNP ruling system couldn't reduce the oil prices, the fertilizer prices? And soon after Honorable Mahinda Rajapaksa became the Prime Minister for 50 days, he gave so many concessions. He reduced the prices of oil as well as the price of fertilizer. Now almost all the paddy lands have been cultivated and they are having their agonies because they have lost the leader of the opposition office as well as the chief opposition whip office. Honorable Deputy Chairman of Committees, every day we come here to Parliament, we are doing a nasty waste and it is very much unreasonable by the people. So we urge Honorable JVP, you made Ranil Wickremesinghe the Prime Minister. Now what you have thought and what you intended to do have been won. Now it is okay. Let's work as a one political party now. So I urge our MPs to work together to give a hope to the people, to allow them to take a decision. It is useless to have a parliament where the people are not properly represented. The people should be given their due chance to exercise their franchise. Tomorrow and even Friday, the parliament will sit. So I urge, if you are not scared of general elections, why can't you dissolve this parliament, please dissolve the parliament and go for a general election. As the UPFA, we are very much ready to extend our helping hand. I thank you.
1 p.m. tomorrow.